Blog Talk Radio.
Program last week, the Atacama Desert work, and my guest, who is Holly Annberg, who had discovered this city, and out in the desert, and I was kind of deluged by emails with, well, how does she know this? What's going on? And it's still quite a interesting question in that it's a known area. The Chilean government is very unhappy about this unauthorized trekking in and out. And according to one archaeologist, I can't name her, there are some significant studies that are on underway that will be taking place in the fall in that part of the desert where this ruined city is. The only thing that Holly Alberg did was bring it to the attention of a lot of people, and then she had a couple of explorers that she financed to go out and look at some of the areas that she had photographed and taken images of from satellites. So it's an actual place. It's a significant place. We don't know anything about the civilization, and as you heard last week, we're still trying to figure it out. And I spoke with Holly earlier this week, and she not only has a new Facebook page that she's putting up, she's in the development phases of putting a website up with some fairly significant new photographs that she sent me, and they are very significant. They're actual walls and foundations and buildings that she had photographs taken of. So take a look at that. And as always, go to the website, go to earthancients.com, excuse me, go to Facebook, and then go to Earth Ancients, Startling New Discoveries from Our Planet's Distant Past. I have yet to get my own site up. It's in the works. I have legions of or volumes of archives of photographs that I have to figure out what to do, but I need to get a site up, and I promise you we'll get something up before the middle of this year, if not before the summertime. So today's topic is an Indonesian temple. A lot of people call it a temple, but it's actually a pyramid. And for a long time, the location known as Gunung Pereng has been a question mark for a lot of researchers. Dr. Danny Hillman, my guest today, brought a lot of information forth when he started doing excavations and sounding of the pyramid, deep radar sounding, surface penetrating radar of the area. And we're going to jump right into this interview. He is in Indonesia, And it's a 15-hour difference from here, me here in San Francisco. So I had to do a pre-recording, but it's very, very good. And you'll get quite a bit out of it. I'm not going to spend too much time with it, but it's interesting. I will say this, and I repeated in this interview. When Dr. Hillman started doing this research, which was about 2.5 years ago, in 2012, he was also, strangely, writing a book called Plato Never Lied, Atlantis is in Indonesia. And he'll talk a little bit about this book in this interview, but it's very curious. It's kind of synchronistic that he believes that this could be an offshoot from an Atlantean colony. I don't think he believes this is Atlantis, but I think he believes that it could be highly sophisticated from that period, prehistoric, pre-Ice Age. Now, before I start this interview, I want everyone, if you can, to go to the Facebook page and read an article that I posted by Robert Schock, Dr. Robert Schock, called Journey to Gunung Penang, The Case for a Lost Ice Age Civilization in Indonesia. It's a good primer for this ruin, and it really outlines the importance of it and its place in history. And the more of it that is excavated, and the more we learn about the way it was built and the age, which, by the way, it's startling to reveal that the carbon dating goes back beyond 20,000 years ago. As we learn more about this, it really helps unfold a prehistoric past in the world. So I'm going to go ahead and start this, and I'll come back with you a little bit later.
My guest today is Dr. Danny Hillman Nanawijaja. He's a geologist, and he had received his PhD from the California Institute of Technology. And I just learned that he wrote a book. His book's called Plato Never Lied, Atlantis in Indonesia. And came out in 2013. And I saw it on Amazon, but I am looking. And hello, Danny, by the way. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Fantastic.
Hello there. Yeah.
And you're in Jakarta right now, correct?
No, I'm in Bandung. Bandung city is the capital city of West Java. It's about 150 kilometers from Jakarta.
Very good. Wow. Well, you're coming through fantastically. We want to get right into this because we have about an hour and a half, and those of us in America get bits and pieces of this structure, this pyramid, and this is a fantastic discovery. It was actually made about 20, 30, 40 years ago. They discovered the structure, but they didn't really know it was a period. Can you give us just a brief overview of the actual findings and what the history of this structure is?
Yeah. Well, actually, the megalithic structures itself on top of the mountain has been found since late 19th century, actually. It's very, very little information. They just know there's the structures made of stones on top of the mountain, and they think it's some kind of cemetery, like ancient cemetery. But it's big. But the strange thing is, since one of the archaeologists, the Dutch archaeologist, has found that in 1914, but after that, there is nothing has been done concerning the site. It's just like forgotten until 1945. There are a bunch of scientists also. It's from Australia. I guess it's from Australian National University, and they do also something in the sites and trying to get an age of the sites. And then that's it. I haven't found a report, the report yet, and it's nothing has been done until 1979. When the local people reported to the government about the sites, and then since then, 1980, the national archaeological teams are starting to study the site, but still they just concentrate on the megalithic sites on top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. It's big; it's like 1 hectare, 1900 meters squares. But the thing is, they don't realize that the megalithic structures is not just that, not on, just on the top, but it covers the entire body of the mound, and also underground. So that's a problem. So until I start study there in that is October 2011, like 3 years ago. And, you know, I just curious and do some geophysical surveys and found very interesting. It's amazing things below that site.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about your interest. Now, did you visit it, the site, and then decide to become an investigator and begin to get the funding to do the excavation? How did you get involved?
Yeah, before that, like a couple of years before that, I began to interest in this archaeological stuff, the megalithic structures. I kind of suspect that most of these structures, the very ancient stuff in Indonesia that has been buried, because Indonesia is a tropical country, it's very intense in weathering, lots of volcanoes that can bury them. Earthquakes, landslide, you name it. So it's like a great cemetery for things that you know in the past. So after I survey a couple sites, other sites before Gunung Padang, so I found also some interesting thing in other places, and I come to Gunung Padang and I have a good topographical data, the digital elevation method. It's like 5 meter grade of topography, which is it's good enough, because at that time 3 years ago I have also researched on the active fault, and one of the active fault, a major active fault in Indonesia, is called Cimandiri fault, like San Andreas fault.
Is there a fault by that site, Gunung Patay?
Yes.
Oh, there
very
is.
Near, very
oh,
near. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Go ahead. So that was your initial interest as a geologist,
yes,
was to study
yes.
the earthquakes
the
that
fault.
Were part of that area.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, like an earthquake geologist, the first thing that I did is to study the morphology. The morphology tell us many things. So I look into the Gunung Padang topography. So I see an unusual morphology of the Gunung Padang, which is doesn't have to be. It's supposed not to look like that. So I think the first interest. Looking at the morphology, it's strange. It's kind of unnatural.
Hmm.
So that's the first look. Yeah, so
saw that unusual morphology of that area,
yes,
and
yes,
then that triggered your interest to really want to study the mountain, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the basic thing of the morphology, the Gunung Padang is on the tertiary volcanic belt. So it's an ancient volcanic zone, but it has not been active for a long time, like
okay.
millions of years, and the mound it looks very solitaire, very distinctive,
mm-hmm.
and the surface it looks uneroded. It means young.
Okay.
It's much younger than the surrounding hills, surrounding topography, surrounding landscape.
Right.
So that's That's one of the unusual things. The other thing is the shape is kind of symmetry, you know. So there's two things. It struck me. There's something very wrong about this mound. So then I look in the story of that megalithic site, and there's not much thing that has been learned from that megalithic site. So I began to suspect. So that's the first thing that why I do the geophysical surface. First is the geoelectric surface. So
right. So after you noticed that there were some anomalies about this mountain, you began to do ground penetrating studies. Is that correct? You began to do studies of what was underneath the dirt into the mountain, right?
Yes, the ground penetration radar surface and the resistivity, the geoelectric surface.
Right. Now, did you do that on your own, with your own dollars, or did you get funding from the local university or the government to do those early studies?
No, I do that on my own.
Wow.
So there is no funding from the government or from others at the first time.
Wow. Okay. That's not cheap.
Well, it's not that expensive also, because I have an equipment. So the thing that I have to pay is the local labor.
Oh, I hear.
And
you.
My time, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
Accommodation is not that expensive, but yes, we have to.
So go ahead. I interrupted you. You were talking about your discovery. So you went from being a geologist. You discovered this anomalous hill, mountain, and you got to the. You said, "Okay, I'm going to look at this because there's just too many strange things about it." You climbed to the top and began doing ground penetrating and resistance studies.
Ground penetration radar.
Right.
GPR.
And so, what did you find when you did that?
Yeah. So, from the ground penetration radar, when I do that on top of the megalithic site, I saw that the 5 meter thick of the soils, where can I see that? So on the depth of 5 meter, I saw the base for, you know, cover the entire megalithic sites. That means I could say it's a natural. There's a base of foundation of that megalithic site.
So it was the actual solid rock that you saw, the actual man-made work? Was it 5 meters that you saw man-made? No? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, on the surface we see that megalithic site, which comprised of the piles of the columnar joints rocks. It's like the columnar rocks. It's a natural rock, but it has been arranged by man.
Okay.
And below that, there's the soils. And what I saw then in GPR is that on the 5 meters below the megalithic site, there's something very interesting. It's a base foundation of that megalithic site.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
See, the thing that I've read about you is you're quite an explorer and you're a geologist, but I understand that a lot of the local archaeologists and some of the universities got very upset with you and tried to shut you down. What was your answer to them? I think you went to the government and said, "What? We have something seriously important here. You need to take a look at it." And you just kept working, correct?
Sure. Yeah. So, many archaeologists work on the sites, but the thing is, they haven't done the subsurface surface yet. And there is no geologist involved. So what they found when they have that megalithic site and they dig not that deep, like no more than 2 meters, but even though they found something, actually it's very strange. So after the megalithic site on the surface, they dig soils like 1 meter, and below that there is a floor that comprised of the columnar joints lying flat, parallel to the layering. And they thought it's a natural rock. So that's what went wrong. So they found something beneath the ground, just 1 meter depth, and they thought it's natural rocks. So when I look on the data and I, you know, directly I can show that it's not a natural rock formation, because the columnar joint rocks on the nature is always vertical to the layer, but it is horizontal, so it's very clearly it's not natural.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what went wrong. There's not been geological survey, you know, the subsurface survey on that side.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can you tell us when you started to do serious excavation of the upper layers?
This excavation has been started in 2012, mid-2012, by my colleague, archaeologist from University of Indonesia, Ali Akbar.
Right.
Yeah, so before the excavation, I have done lots of geophysical survey by GPR and geosensitivity.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then can you briefly tell us about when you went to the government and you, I believe the government began to fund your discovery and give you the resources to do a thorough, and I guess it's a continuing excavation.
Mm-hmm. It's a long story, but shortly, until now, we have not found by the government yet.
Oh, you haven't?
There's no fund from the government. No, we haven't.
Okay. But you were recognized by the government, and I think the governor came out and you talked to him about the site, and it's actually become quite important, hasn't it, by the locals? I mean, it's always been
sure,
sacred.
Yeah.
It's always been a sacred place.
Sacred, yes.
But it's now becoming quite a curiosity because of the work that you have done. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about why, what you have discovered in your early excavations that makes this site quite impressive.
Yeah, I think the first data that came out is from the geophysical survey, the subsurface survey, so that showing beneath the megalithic site there are big structures, monumental, you know, the monument structures consist of the rocks. It's big. It's the mound is from the parking lot. It's like 100 meter high. It's still continuing down there to the base of the river, like 200 meter high. So basically, the geophysical survey showing the pyramid-like structures beneath the mountain. I think that's the first, you know, the finding that goes out to the public. That's it's become controversial because there are lots of people believe in it and lots of people don't, which is very, you know, it's the first time in Indonesia.
Okay, so it's the first time that such a structure like that's been found? Is that what you mean?
Yes, there's no pyramids in Indonesia before that. And it's we said to people it's very old. It's more than, it's a few thousand, it's thousands of years old. And it's also against the most people believe, because the history of Indonesia just began after 400 AD. Before that, people believed there is no civilization. So when once said there is a pyramid, a great pyramid that's made by people thousands of years ago, which makes it impossible for lots of people.
Right. So they're having a hard time believing because it goes against traditional history of the area.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's against the mainstream belief of most archaeologists also, and the historian.
So they're giving you a hard time too, because they're saying, well, Danny, you are wrong in your assessment of this structure. So tell us why you're right and what you found after your initial discovery that makes this not only an extremely unique structure,
yeah,
but also a man-made structure.
Yeah, well, I'm a scientist, I'm a geologist, and I'm just follow where the data lead me. So after I see the geophysical subsurface data, and which has to be followed by, you know, by other works like excavation, drilling also. I do drilling to know what we see on the image of the GPR and the resistivity, right? And the excavation to prove what beneath the ground that has been started by my archaeology college, Ali Akbar, since mid-2012. And he found that even in the surface, the megalithic site in the surface is not just on top, but it covers the slopes of the mound. And that also something new, something unknown before. So before our excavation, the surrounding hills, the slope, it's very vegetated, so people can see that structures. But when we clear up all that bushes, so then the structures appear.
Ah, yeah. I saw a recent photograph of the foliage gone. You can begin to see the top in the actual outline of the pyramid. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever people say, you know, our research, our survey in Gunung Padang that has been going on for 3 years, it's a long time, it's very intensive. We are using most of earth science method, geological method for exploration that include the resistivity survey, the GPR, compenetration radar methods, and then seismic tomography, geomagnet, and drillings. There are now 7 drill cores around Gunung Padang with a depth between 15 meters to 30 meters. So basically our data is very comprehensive. It's very convincing. And also excavation, there are dozens of excavation now. Of course, the data is accumulated not just instantly, but in 3 years. And we do our best effort to do that, because I myself, it's not easy to believe, what I see, because it's very strange. It's something very new and something very controversial. Well,
can you tell us a little bit about what you find that is strange and a little unusual that makes you kind of scratch your head?
Of course, when we found there's a structure, the big structures underground that is very spectacular, and as a scientist, I not just believe in that. I'm skeptical too. So I do more surveys, trying different methods, drilling. One drilling is not enough, you know. Adding one become two. Adding one again becomes 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So
you're trying to verify your data is what you're saying.
Exactly.
You're doing a repeat test so that you can constantly verify and make sure what you are seeing is a valid a reproducible test.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think the final test is just August 2014 when I did lots of excavation to prove what beneath the mound. So I think after that time, I can convince myself that what I see on the drilling on the subsurface structures is true.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So I can understand why other people, you know, very hard to believe. So like I said, I myself, it's not easy to believe that until I can prove that yes, it is correct. It's verified.
Okay.
It's valid.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what you've discovered. What is this? Would you call this a pyramid?
Yes, I think so. But it's very unique. It's not like a Egyptian pyramid. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a Mayan pyramid, but it's a bit different also.
So it's not like an Egyptian pyramid. It's more like a Tikal Maya in Guatemala, or would it be more of a Yucatan Puuc style pyramid? Did you have kind of a definition, or are you just saying generally this is a pyramid structure that is notable and maybe similar to a Central American Maya pyramid? Is that's basically what you've come up with?
Yeah, it's a truncated pyramid, but truncated, but it's a bit different from Maya, because Maya is basically a symmetric on four sides, but this is not, because it has a longest axis. You know, it's elongated. Okay. It's elongated, the form.
Okay.
And the front face, it doesn't look like making a, you know, like a pyramid, a flat surface. It's more like a shape.
I've noticed that the top is very long, and it's flat, and it's like there's a top section, and I'm only gonna guess it's like maybe it's like 60 feet long by 60 wide, and then it drops down to another smaller level, but it's like there's a double top. From the drawings, it looks like it's very, very unique. And then there's, have you discovered staircases up to the top yet?
The staircase from on the surface?
The ground? Yeah.
There are stairs from the front of the mountain, which has been found even before.
Okay.
But it has been modified by people. Yeah. But so, that is the first leg.
Okay, so what? Give us a rough approximation of the dimensions of this. How high is this pyramid?
If you are talking about the first layer, the youngest one, it at least 100 meter high. It could be up to 200 meter, 200 meter high. Mm-hmm. But the other one, the second layers, it could be less than 100 meter high, I would think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the total pyramid is in what, seven layers or sections?
The layers, it's a multi-layers, multi-culture, multi-ages. It's about five, I would think.
Four to five layers.
Layers, yes.
And would you say, as far as you know, that the structure in its entirety is made up of these natural stones that were fitted and aligned in such a way to create a pyramid shape, or does the stone actually make the pyramid? In other words, like the giant Giza pyramid, where man cut limestone or granite and formed it. How was the forming of this Indonesian pyramid made?
Yeah, the core of the mound, it looks like the natural basalt mound. It's an intrusion basalt, not basalt, I'm sorry, andesite.
Oh, andesite, okay.
Andesite. So very before the people made the pyramids, it's a natural andesite mound. It's an intrusive lava, actually. So it's a lava mound. Mm-hmm. So that is the core of the pyramids.
Okay.
And after that, people reshape that natural mound, become something looks like pyramids.
Okay.
And after that, people make artificial layers that cover that natural, originally the natural andesite lava mound. And the artificial rock layers that cover that originally natural mound is about 15 meters thick. So if we drill, well, I drill that mound from the top, so 15 meter layers is like 100% is artificially rock layers.
Okay.
That's right. So in the 15 meters depth, after the 15 meters depth, we found the natural andesite lava, but it has been reshaped.
Ah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, is there any other structure in that area or in Indonesia that is similar in construction?
The construction, you mean the artificial construction?
Yes.
No. Well, I think the one that, well, there are, especially the first layer, which is the simplest one, the youngest, but the simplest, is with, there are lots of mounds like that in Indonesia. It's called the Punden Berunda, translated to step pyramids.
Step pyramids, right. Okay.
Yes.
So tell us about your boring, your drilling, what you discovered in terms of an age from the first level to the second level to the third and into the fourth. What can you give us any time periods?
Yes.
And yeah, tell us about that.
Okay. Yeah. We are using the carbon dating for the ages.
So that's C14 dating.
C14 dating.
And what university was the one who was conducting the analysis?
We used two. One is the National Lab here in Indonesia. It's from the Nuclear Department. It's called Batan.
Okay.
Nuclear Agency. And the second one is in America, in Florida. It's called the Beta Analytic.
Oh, my God. You came to America for analysis, too.
Sure. Yeah, that's the best, very well-known lab for C14 dating.
Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think if people understand C14 dating, it's not easy. There are lots of tricks. Especially if we're dating the megalithic structures, it's not easy because we want to date not the rocks but the construction.
Right.
And what basically I date is the soils associated with the structures, the age of the construction. So the results, the first layer, which is the megalithic sites, on top of the soils. So I date the soils, especially related to human activities, related to the construction. The ages, I have like three ages carbon dating, two of them that has been sent to Beta Analytic, and the age is about 2500 to 3500 BP. That's before presence.
Right.
So that is the estimate of the first layer. And I consider that is the oldest date. It could be younger than that. It could be younger than the soils. Mm-hmm. So that is basically the age of the soils of the first layer.
Okay.
And the second layer, which is constructed by the similar rocks with the first, is a columnar joint rock, a columnar joint salt. But then I realized that maybe it's not all of the columnar joint rocks is natural. I think some of them has been shaped by man. But anyway, the soils between that rocks and also the soil at the base of that construction, which is on a depth of about 5 meters, the soils with the gravels and stuff, and there are lots of carbons in it, so I date that, and I have two dating of the second layers, and it's all pointing out to the age of 7,000 years BP or 5,000 BC, which is spectacular because it's very, very old for archaeology. It's very young for geologists, but it's very, very old for archaeology.
So let me understand this. You didn't pull out organic material. You pulled out a geological material that was within the construction zone of each layer. Is that
correct? The organic soil.
No, define what organic soil is. I'm a little unclear there.
Yeah, the soil that has the carbon contents on it.
So,
grains of carbon.
How would that be identified as a man was there, soil? Mm-hmm. How is that identified? Because that's my curiosity.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is that they have to take like bones or chards or something that was eaten and test that. So tell really quickly, tell us how you can show that that's a man-made sample.
Yeah, so the one of the carbon dating of that second layers is I took from the base of the construction, which is man-made base of the construction,
okay,
like soils that has been spread all over the places before they made the second layers, the construction.
Okay, gotcha.
So there are soils, stones, and you know the organic rich soils.
Okay,
is carbon on it. So my assumption that soils is from the soil surrounding the mountain on that time when people constructing the monument, the site.
Okay.
So, yeah, that means is that the carbon content that's from the living things.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's on the similar age when they made that construction.
Very good. Okay.
Could be older. Could be they took the soil older, but I. That's my assumption. They take the soil, the present soil, the present then.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's layer two. So then you got two more.
Yeah. And then layer the third layers, which is harder to date. I also take like three or four sample soils, organic soils, in between the rocks on the drilling core, and the ages varies from 13,000 to 27,000.
27,000 BP?
27 years BP.
Oh my
God. But that is not very good date because the interval, the range of date is so huge from, like I said, 13,000 to 27,000 on the same stratigraphic layers, which means that there's uncertainties of the dating because of the sources.
Okay.
I take the soils. So the soil has many ages. But the one that more convincing in one location of that temple, I will just say temple or pyramid. The third layers, it has been buried by the construction soil, the fill. It's not the natural soil, it's buried soils.
Okay.
It's very thick, about 7 meters thick, that buried the third layer. And I took the samples that close to the construction on the, like, 5 meter depth from the drill cores. And the age is about 10,000 BP or 8,000 BC. So that is the age of the soils that buried the structure, the third layer.
The third layer, okay.
Yes. So that is more convincing. That means the third layer has to be older than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How much older? That is uncertain because the soils on the third layers range from 13,000 to 27,000.
God, that's a lot. Okay, and then the fourth layer, the base layer.
Well, the fourth layer is the andesite, massive andesite, lava andesite, but I cannot date that.
Oh my God, so the base is solid stone?
It's a solid stone, it's massive, it's a lava.
Oh, it's lava, lava, it's not, well...
Volcanic.
And would you say that it's hard to say if that's man-made or not, I guess, huh? I mean, if it's a volcanic lava, that's the foundation for the whole structure.
It's not a foundation. We can see clearly from the image, from GPR, resistivity and the seismic tomography. And it looks like to me, the present form, it doesn't look natural. It has been shaped.
Okay.
It has been carved by human.
When you say shaped, would you say like dried or cooled and dried and hardened lava that was chiseled into a shape? Or was it
chisel?
You think
chisel?
Okay, so chisel. You have because evidence of you've excavated the fourth layer and you can see evidence of man-made manipulation of that found at the ground level.
Yeah, we have not dig into that deep because it's like 15 meters depth. It's not easy to dig that, but we know from the subsurface data, from geophysical subsurface data. It's clear to me that the shape, the form of that lava andesite is similar to the younger layer. So it's form a pyramid also. And on that massive rock, the andesite, we found like a space, a void chamber, tunnel, that we see from the resistivity and the seismic tomography. People argue that it could be lava tunnel, natural lava tunnel, but again, from the shape that I see on the images, it doesn't look like natural. It's been engineered.
Engineered?
It could be engineered, yeah. Okay. It could be initially it's a lava tunnel, natural, mm-hmm. but it has been reshaped again, and it's been chiseled, it's been formed, reformed.
Let me ask you, have you been able to tunnel into the interior portion of this temple pyramid? And I know, I'm going to ask you this in a minute, but I know you found a couple of different rooms, but if we talk about the base, have you had a chance to actually get into that fourth level with any kind of excavation or anything other than just scanning?
Yeah, what we have now is the scanning, geophysical scanning, and drilling data, that drill course.
Okay.
We haven't been able to excavate that deep. The deepest trench, the deepest trenching that we have is 11 meter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and the fourth layer is 15 meter.
15 meter. Okay. Well, I recently read that you have uncovered a couple of different spaces, and I want to talk to you about some metal that's been recovered and where those metal artifacts were found. Can you talk a little bit about some of those excavations? I think there's a room or two that you've uncovered, or spaces or something.
Yeah. Okay, there are some indications of metals. The first one, we have some stone artifacts that has been chiseled, and if we look into that chisel, it's very clear to me that it has to be chiseled by very sharp and hard like metals. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. But the metal artifact itself, we haven't found that yet, except the like a lump of metals. A lump of metals.
Yeah, yes, big lump of metal. That. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And we think it's associated with, I don't know, maybe the, you know, part of that tools or something else, but it's metal.
Okay.
Yeah. And the third metal is the coin. It's the metal coins that we found from 12 meter depth that came out from the drilling when we drilled that, and that the metal coin came out brought by the drilling muds.
Wow. So what kind of coin is it? Is it a, have you had the metal of the coin analyzed, or is it a coin that is, tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been analyzed by my archaeologist friend and also the coin expert. Unfortunately, lots of relics on the coin that has been gone, has been erased because of the weathering and, you know, lots of things. It's very old. But well, some people think that it's very similar to the very old Dutch coin from the 17th centuries. But it's not that the same. There's some part is similar, but not all. So there is no, let's see. It's still uncertain which coin is that.
Okay.
Some people, you know, have a strong argument that it's like similar to the Dutch coin. But still, if it's really a Dutch coin, that become a problem also, because it came out from the 12 meter depth.
Yeah, and that was the level level 2 at
level 3.
Oh, so that's
layer 3.
Yeah, 13,000 before present, right?
That's right. So my thing is, if that is really a Dutch coin, that means the Dutch that has dig the Gunung Barang in the past, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't work very well.
It could be. It could be.
Have you found any organic material in any of the layers that you have done sample excavations on?
Organic,
human bones, animal bones, human bones.
No, not yet.
Okay. At this point, how much of the mountain has been excavated? How much would you say is excavated, and what is your goal in terms of excavating this location?
Yeah. In terms of excavation, I think we need much more excavation. We need much more excavation. The mountain is big. It's 15 hectares.
Yes,
could be
huge.
25 hectares. And the last excavation that we did on August to September is good. We have a few trenching on the top and a few trenching on the side, on the slope.
Yeah.
And from several trenching, we could say that the second layers really exist, and it's really not natural. It's an artificial. Which make me happy, because at least we can prove that the second layer exists, and the second layer is very ancient. It's 7,000 years old. Just by that finding, it's something. It's something amazing. It's something controversial.
Yeah.
And I think we have to work, on phases, on steps, step by step. So, but even for the second layers, we need much more excavation to see, better the construction of the second layers first. I think that my next goals. And then perhaps I could think of, I'm hoping that when we do the more excavation of the second layers, I could find something like doors or windows or something that I,
yeah.
And then I could excavate it to the third layers.
Right.
And also the drilling there has been 7, but it's not enough. Until now, we are not able to drill the chamber, the main chamber on the mountain, because it's hiding under the spot that is very easy to drill on that side without destroying the site. Without moving the rocks around, that we are not allowed to do that.
Okay, so they won't. The government won't allow you to drill into that main chamber
because it's not easy. It's on the some kind of slope that rock structures. So we have to have a better drilling equipment, and we have to move that megalithic sites around. It needs a special permission to do that, because we have to move the rocks and the preface to the original position, something like that. Mm-hmm. So until now, our best excavation that we have some freedom to do the excavation is that last August and September. With the help of the military people for 1 month. But I'm quite happy with that, because it's very intensive, and I can dig in 1 month, and I can dig like 10 trenching, which is a lot.
Yeah.
But for the next step, I need more freedom. I need more excavations, more people, mm-hmm. and more authorities to do, for example, that drilling to the main chamber. Mm-hmm. and I have to have a permission to move the megalithic stones around,
Oh, I hear you.
Be able to drill it. So that's need a special permission. Otherwise, I will go to jail.
So is there a governing body that you need to get permission and permits and release forms from who allows you to do these further excavations?
Well, in terms of the legal, what we accomplish is actually is quite good. We have a letter, we have an authorization from the governor, which I have. I'm like the head of the team of the on the province level, on the governor level, and then I also chief geologist for the national team that has been formed by the Minister of the Culture, Indonesian Culture, who has an authority over the sites of the archaeology things.
Okay.
And it's a national team, so actually I have a legal to do that.
Okay.
But what I need is to be able to do more research in Gunung Padang. We have to move to the what we call here is the restoration stage, restoration, not a research stage. In Indonesia, if we still have on the research mode for archaeology, we have a limited, freedom to do excavation.
Okay.
But if we already on the stage that we will restore the sites like restoration, right? Then we have a freedom to do more excavation, digging or whatever we need, because we will restore the sites.
Exactly. But yeah, the governor, obviously, and these other people that are in high office must believe that this is a very important place that you've discovered, or they wouldn't give you permission to continue your work. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. The governor, the vice governor, very supportive. The ministry also, and also the president, and the high rank of the military forces also very supportive of this site. So at this stage, what we are waiting is for the there's a change in the government at the end of the last year.
Okay.
So the Ministry of the Cultures who formed a team, a national team for this Gunung Padang, that has been replaced by the new minister.
Uh-huh.
And before the last president stepped out, President SBY, the president also has made the special, it's called the President Decree, to continue the work in the Gunung Padang.
Wonderful. You
know, which is very good. So,
well, but the bottom line, though, is funding, isn't it? To get the funding.
That's right. The funding that. So we are waiting for the new minister to act on that, because he's the one who is responsible to continue the Gunung Padang, including for the funding.
Okay, so you've submitted a proposal for continual excavation and, as you would call it, restoration of this historical site, and I guess you say you're waiting for the funds to really. Well, what are these funds for? Just to continue the work, or does it actually, in your proposal to them, does it say my goal is to unveil the true structure as it once looked? Or is it just to clean it up a little bit, or what? What is your proposal for them?
Yeah. The proposal is to restore the sites, the first layer and the second layers. That is my main proposal for the next 3 to 5 years.
Wow. And so when you say restore, is that removing all the dirt and all the foliage around it and exposing the stone?
Well, for the first layer, all the stone structures on the slope, it has been very in a bad shape condition. We have to restore that again. We have to reconstruct that again. But the second layer, most of them are still buried. So we still don't know what is the condition of the second layers yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that we have to do. So restore the first and the second layers, find out how, you know, the condition of the second layers.
Okay.
But parallel to that, we also have to do more surface digging, perhaps making a tunnel to find out about the third and the fourth layers, including the chamber. That is very important.
Exactly. Can you talk just a little bit about the composition? I read an analysis by Dr. Robert Schock when he visited with you last year, or actually 2013, and actually did a analysis and compared the stones to another site. And do you believe the stones are man-made, or would you say that they were brought from another area in mass to build this this temple?
That is a very good question, actually. The exact answer, I don't know. The fact is, we look around on the region, in the surrounding the site, and we cannot find the source for that rock, the natural columnar joint rock formation. We cannot found that surrounding the site at the one things. And from the drilling also, we cannot find the natural rock formation beneath the ground. So the source of the rock, we could not find anywhere surrounding, like in the radius of like 5 kilometers.
That's very strange.
Yeah, that's very strange.
Yeah.
So the possibility, if we think it's a natural rock formation, it has to be brought by far away, on a distance of like tens of kilometers. We have that kind of rocks, but it's very far, like 100 kilometers away from that site. And the second thing, the shape of that so-called the natural columnar joint rocks formation is not that right also. Some of them, it very similar to the natural rocks, but many of them has a peculiar shape. It's not straight, but it's like more lots of curve, lots of dent, and like has been carved, has been chiseled. Even Robert Shaw also, when you know, when we go to Gunung Padang, he's just kind of wondering why is this columnar joint rock is look strange. He said, he said that he never saw something like that anywhere else in the world. It's because lots of the columnar joint, it's curved like band.
Interesting.
Yeah, and there is one artifact that I found on the PowerPoint that I gave you. Actually, it's a big columnar rock, but it has a band. It has been shaped as a corner band. It's like 70 degree band.
Okay.
And I can say that impossible is it's not natural. It has been made.
Really?
But that proved that, yes, that proved that whoever made Gunung Padang can shape the rocks, looks like the columnar joint rocks. Yeah, so it's a big question.
Yeah.
Whether some of them is natural, some of them not, or all of them is not natural. I don't know.
Let me ask you this from a geologist's point of view. Are any of those stone columns, do they possess any kind of magnetic properties which would either reflect or support geomagnetic flux from telluric fields that might be bubbling up from down? Have you discovered any energy geomagnetic fields underneath that whole area?
Yeah, In general, the volcanic rocks like andesite has the magnetic properties, and I do have the geomagnetic survey of that mound, and found several magnetic anomaly. A couple of them is very big magnetic anomaly that could, you know, like sway around your compass.
Really?
Yeah, if you pass that spot, your compass will go crazy, you know.
Fantastic.
And on the map of the geomagnetic survey, I saw that anomaly, the concentration of the big magnetic anomaly. It's very big. I know it's big because when I drill the near that site, I have a drilling construction. And drilling is iron. I have a drilling construct site on that, and one of my team doing the magnetic survey around that site. And what makes surprise that my team comes to me and said something not right. They said, you know, the magnetic anomaly that comes from the ground is bigger than what's come from the drilling site. So that means there are something, I don't know, stone or metals beneath the ground that give that big magnetic anomaly.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. And would you say it's directly underneath the structure, or is it bubbling up from within the actual temple? Where would you where were your reading? Where were your readings coming from?
Yeah, the biggest magnetic anomaly is in the middle of the mound, so in the middle of the site.
That's very telling.
Top.
That's
and
very
also,
telling.
Yeah, it's associated with the major chamber, with the chamber.
It's associated with that middle chamber?
With the major chamber, yeah.
The major chamber, which, are you talking about the one that you think is a lava cone, or the one that's the upper area of the structure?
The major chamber is in the center of the mound,
right?
Between the depth from 20 to 60 meters to 50 meters.
Okay, so you're saying that this anomaly is not coming from the base lava area, it's coming from the middle of the temple slash pyramid and bubbling up.
Well, the lava is the core of that monument.
Right.
Yeah. The lava is from depth 15 meter to 30 meters.
Okay. But my question is, you said you got readings that are coming out of that chamber, right?
Not far from that.
Okay.
Yes.
What does that say? What does that tell you?
Well, I don't know. It could be that something on the chamber that gives that magnetic anomaly, mm-hmm. or something surrounding the chamber.
Does it look from your readings like a natural forming geomagnetic field, or does it look kind of like artificial? I don't know if you can see that with your current technology, but would you say is from a geologist's point of view, does it look like a natural telluric field or whatever kind of field that
It doesn't look like natural because the magnetic anomaly that looks around it, surrounding by much lower magnetic field surrounding that globe. So it's kind of isolated form of the magnetic. And if we are talking about the geology, I have to have something like a pipe intrusion, the igneous rock intrusion from the bottom, which could make that kind of anomaly, but you don't have that kind of rocks on that region, so it has to come, the magnetic anomaly have to come from like a singular body, like
you mean like a single source.
Yeah. So it's like a body, like a single body that gives that anomaly.
Okay.
So which is distinct from the surrounding. rocks.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, and it doesn't look like natural to me.
Okay, it's fascinating. Now, this is something I want to talk to you briefly about, and we got a few minutes left. Here you are, a geologist, a PhD from the California Institute of Technology, and you wrote a book called Plato Never Lies, Atlantis mm-hmm. is in Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about this book. Because that's a pretty hefty book.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously you believe that what you have discovered... Well, why don't you tell us about the book? Because I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But tell us about the book.
Yeah. So the book contains three things, actually. One is about the Plato manuscript, Critias.
Plato's Critias book, yeah. Okay.
Critias and Timaeus, right?
Yeah.
So the second thing is about my hypothesis about the civilizations.
Okay.
The hypothesis goes like this. We know for sure that the human being, the Homo sapiens, the modern human being, mm-hmm. has been existing in the world since 200,000 years ago, based on the fossil, based on DNA research.
Right.
And everybody accepted that, geology, archaeology, whoever, mm-hmm. because it's the facts. But the other fact is our history, the human history, began only after 10,000 years ago, 12,000 years ago for top. So that means we are missing the records of the human being for something like 190 years. And we always think that there's no civilization. The human being is always primitive from 200,000 to 10,000, and then suddenly get an idea to become human, which is very strange to me. So then I post hypothesis, which is actually that has been initiated by other people like Robert Shaw, for example. It's about catastrophic. So I believe, and geology knows about the cycles of the global catastrophe, mm-hmm. and we think that the global catastrophe is also recycles the human civilization. So the human can develop the population increase and then diminish, destroyed by the catastrophe, and starting again from the beginning. So that's the idea of the hypothesis that I include in the books.
Okay. But is there is this work related to this temple / pyramid? When did you write this book?
Yeah.
It was based. Did you kind of decide that you wanted to? Because the book I'm looking at it here. It was written in 2013, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
the book is, I made the book 2012 actually.
Oh, okay. Just as you were beginning to do the work. So is it your belief that this could be part of part of Atlantis or part of a very sophisticated civilization who lived prior to the Ice Age, prehistory?
Well, that's not easy to answer that. And the books also, I don't conclude that. I just pose the thought. So, on the book, I also introduced the research on the Gunung Padang. Just an introduction that we are digging the monument, a pyramid-like monument, and we think it's the age is very old, it's more than 10,000 years ago, and if you compare to the plateau Atlantis, the age is similar, you know, so it could be, it could be related, could be not,
okay.
But still, if Atlantis does not exist, the Gunung Padang pyramid exists still. So, I'm talking about the ancient civilization in a Sunda land in the past.
Right.
Whether the name is Atlantis or other things, it's still the civilizations. Mm-hmm. And the Plato itself, the Plato manuscript, is very interesting also because There are lots of books describe the Atlantis, but I didn't find any book that really discuss about the Plato, Timaeus, and Critias itself with a scientific, you know, view, critical views. And what I found is very interesting because the Plato manuscript has to be understood by geologists. Yeah, it is, by geologists. And it's very interesting. It's very scientific. The description of the Atlantis land is very precise. It, you know, so
yeah,
nobody have really discussed that. So what I'm saying on that book is, look, you have to, you know, read the Plato manuscript better. You have to analyze that. It's not, people should not taking that Plato manuscript lightly. There are lots of information about on that manuscript, including that he said that very clearly on the manuscript. He said that you didn't know, long time ago, our ancestors are great. They are a great civilization. But
right.
What you don't know that, you know, there are lots of catastrophic events, not once but many times,
yeah,
in cycles. And he also says about our great ancestors has been destroyed, and then we have to learn from the beginning like a baby, right?
Exactly, we have to start over.
Yeah, so that actually I think about that catastrophic cycles before reading the Plato Atlantis, Plato manuscript. I already developed that theory, that hypothesis. So when I read that Plato, I just kind of surprised.
I love the fact that you came up with this book.
Yeah.
As you were discovering this, it's almost amazing. Now I would imagine that your colleagues and those in the scientific field are going, now, what's Danny Hillman doing here with this book?
Exactly.
Is he going crazy? But I think the world needs more of these kinds of books. And I want to ask you, is that book in English? Has it been translated?
Yes, it's been translated to English, yes.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm going to post that on the website so people can read about it. In the final few minutes we have here, can you, what is the goal, what is your aspirations for this work you're doing? Obviously to expose and to reveal what this structure is, a temple, pyramid, or whatever, but really, is there anything more that you are wishing to have as a result of your work? Because you just told me, you told us, that your next projection or projected excavation is between 3 and 5 years, and that's quite a bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah. My very near future goals is I have to publish the result of my research in the past 3 years. It's just SOP, I have to publish that and the scientific journals, and I will also write books about the previous results. And I'm hoping the new government will continue the works in Gunung Padang, support us to do more excavations, more surveys, more dating. So the ultimate goals in Gunung Padang, we hope that we could really prove to, you know, scientifically to the world that the monument, the pyramids are exist. And I hope more digging in the future that can uncover the form so people can see by their naked eye, so you don't have to just look into the scientific data, but I hope that it can be excavated so it, you know, all people can look it visually by the naked eye. And of course, I'm hoping that the we could reconstruct the sites, so it can be, you know, it can be good. It can be we can restore the original shape to the original shape. And I hope also this is not the last finding in Indonesia. If the Gunung Padang is the great pyramid from the very ancient period, and the ancient period in the glacial age, it will not be alone. There should be more of that kind in Indonesia. There should be more pyramids on that. And I also have started to look around Indonesia and see the potential, including what's beneath the sea. I found the harbor, the ancient harbor of, I don't know, maybe Atlantis. Anyway, but we hope that this Gunung Padang will contribute to knowledge of the world, of the possibility of the ancient civilization that has been lost, has been unknown to us. And we hope in the future people will be more open-minded and start digging by themselves to find more about this lost civilization.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Hillman, with Jaja, I really appreciate your time. And
thank you.
I know our audience appreciates this information because you are there, you are doing the excavation work, and like I mentioned in the very beginning, those of us in the United States get just bits and pieces of information that comes out of Indonesia. So I appreciate you taking this time and telling us about what you've discovered. I can't say this, that we all wish you much luck and continued success in your work, and we look forward to hearing great things from you.
Thank you, Pat.
Great.
So that was the interview with Dr. Dan Hillman, which was a few days ago. And I have to tell you, I really enjoyed that interview because of the freedom of his expression. And here's a classically trained geologist who's basically saying, as he's drilling and reviewing the results of these core samples of these magnetic resonating systems, that he's dumbfounded as to what he's getting. Obviously an artificial man-made structure, and the chamber he describes in the center of the temple, how it's magnifying the naturally occurring geomagnetic fields. Not sure how it's being amplified. Is there something in that chamber? How he is calling a lot of the structures anomalies because it doesn't make sense to him or any of his team. And this is a very, very refreshing, unedited view of a significant structure, a significant pyramid in Indonesia, Gunung Padang. So I am going to post a number of photographs from Dr. Hillman that have never been published before on the Facebook page and Earth Ancients Facebook. And you will see the images that come back on his equipment of these cavities of this one major chamber, and some of the photographs of some of the levels that they've excavated. It's a monstrous site, and he expects it to take a number of years to completely excavate. The other thing, if you've been following this discovery, is the government's complete acceptance and interest in this. Now, he mentioned, Dan mentioned, that the governor came out, and there's actual pictures of the governor coming out and looking at the site, acknowledges its uniqueness, and I think they're going through a new election, but the Minister of Affairs, Cultural Affairs, has been out, and everybody is just totally enthralled and interested in and supportive of his work. And this is very rarely something that we see in the United States or in Western culture, is here's a geologist who has found an anomaly, a pyramid, man-made, with all kinds of strange readings and information coming out. And yet, rather than putting him down and slamming him down, and he had some archaeologists that were upset, and they're still upset with him. But beyond that, he is moving forward and continuing his work, and I just find it just fascinating. So this is a very great opportunity. It was a great opportunity to listen and talk with him. I hope you liked the interview. And if you wouldn't mind letting me know by posting your remarks on the Facebook page that I'll post in the next 24 hours. So that's Gnome Penang, and it is the mysterious pyramid of Indonesia. We don't know, we'll probably won't know for a long time if it, what its relationship is to any of the other ancient sites in Indonesia or around the world, if it's related to any known ancient site or not, but we hope to learn more as more information comes forth. So that's the program today. I hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you next time, next week.